Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilek, and Sujit Mallow, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com. Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 181, being recorded on the 31st of May, 2017, with special guest Arturo Lucatero. I am Sujit, and on Skype with me, I have Evan and our special guest Arturo. Unfortunately, Kale is busy tonight, and he couldn't join us. But
he's blockchaining somewhere.
That's become a thing now, right? Blockchaining, hash blockchaining.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. So let's get started with our updates. And Evan, I thank you for putting some in the show notes. I consolidated your list with my list, so we have kind of one list to work off. And let's just go to it. So, is there anything you want to start with on that list?
Yeah. The one thing that jumped out at me was the Azure backups now are able to do Windows Server System State.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So this is in preview, but right. So the problem with Azure backup historically was it was you couldn't get back to a running system state. Right. So it wasn't an OS restore. Now we've pushed this out in preview now where you can do a full OS restore. And that's huge. Right. Because now you have you can actually restore the machine back to what it was versus just getting your files and the like at that point.
And I was reading somewhere about this that it's not. You know, even if you don't want to get the whole OS restored, like the Active Directory database, and just funny, we're talking about Active Directory, but just if you need to just restore that particular database, you can just restore that file, right? Although it's a running file on the system, it can restore it. And this is something that the built-in backup program could always do in Windows, right? It's the Azure backup that couldn't do it.
Right.
And now the Azure backup is working together with the Windows backup program to enable all these cool things, and that's really nice.
Yeah, that's the server state stuff versus just, you know, I'm backing up individual files. But and this is big, right? Because this is kind of a, you know, it's the difference between, okay, I've saved my files and I can recover this machine, but I have to rebuild it versus, yeah, you know what, I just need to roll this back and I'm back up and running.
Exactly. Right. And this has become even more important, you know, because of the recent hacking stories and whatnot, right? They'll always want to go back to yesterday's state, and now they can't.
Yep.
Good. Yeah, so the one that I like, and I think I may have sent you guys a note, I started playing around this. I was very impressed. It's called the Video Indexer, okay? It's a new service from Azure Cognitive Services. You know, the cognitive services are these series of APIs, right, that do various things like voice recognition, image recognition, transcription, things like that. But, you know, you have to write all these programs to be able to do something intelligently, and it's quite complicated when you get down to it.
So they've built it. It's
not trivial, exactly. And so they've built this slightly higher level of abstraction around it in the form of this video indexer. And they did, I think, at build, they had a preview of it, and I just got wind of it yesterday for some reason. And it's really cool. So all you have to do is to provide your video or audio file, okay, to it. Just upload it. And it goes, it takes a few minutes sometimes, depending on the size of the file, and it will index the file. The video and audio components of it. When I say index, it's going to index like the text, you know, the speaking parts in there. It's going to convert that into text, obviously. It's going to figure out if there are certain signs in the videos, right, that are, and it will index that as well. So, you know, if there's any billboards in the videos, it'll be able to capture that as well. And even people's faces on top of that. So it indexes all of that and makes it searchable. And now you could say, you know, find me where it says so-and-so in the video. And boom, it takes you straight to that point in the video where, it's, you know, the person's talking about that.
Yeah, that's huge. My wife is, you know, for her psychology degree, right? She had to do this big study where she recorded a bunch of her participants, and then she had to get everything transcribed, and then she had to analyze it. And I mean, this was a massive effort. And this video was, you know, when we had a group session, so it was about 2 hours worth of video. I mean, this was a huge effort to get this data in there. Something like this, right? I mean, I don't know if it's quite ready for that scenario, though. I think she's probably going to want to go play with this. But like that, that's a whole, you know, it takes out a whole ton of complexity and effort, right, as we continue to evolve this.
So just to play around with it, what I did is I took the last episode that we did, right? And I just uploaded it. I fed it to the indexer. In about 5 and 10 minutes, it had indexed it, and it gave me this beautiful website where we could go in and look for any word that was said in the podcast. So
wow, that's
you know,
awesome.
Just type in, for example, batch. We did HPC batch last time, and then it will show you exactly where it says batch, and you click on that portion, and you can hear it'll jump directly to that part of the audio where it said batch, for example. And so it's really nice if you're, you know, if you want to find things, because typically audio is not something that's easily indexable.
Yeah, it's tough,
right?
It's
kind of
tough
lost,
to index.
Right? Once you make it audio, it's the content is kind of lost unless you listen to it. So I thought this was really cool, and I'm really looking forward to playing around with that a little more.
Yeah. No, I see a little pet project for you down the road, right?
And I'm going to start adding it to the. I'll try to start adding it to our podcasts, you know, going forward.
Yeah, that'll be great.
What else is good? So, you know, we talked about those low priority VMs last time. I think part of Azure Batch, we're talking to our friends Felipe and Martin. Now they have extended that feature to R, you know, the R server.
Yeah.
So because R is, you know, can involve a lot of computation, right? And so now they've integrated R to do the parallel processing with Azure Batch automatically, but it also leverages the low cost VMs, the low priority VMs, I should say, which are lower cost, obviously. And so that's a new service that's available.
I think what's interesting about that is, and I would be interested to know from somebody that says to this, I got to think that even low priority, right, so not instantaneous, is still relatively fast, right? You're getting it because given the capacity that we have.
Yeah.
Right?
It's just that it's not guaranteed, that's all.
Yeah, but I mean, if you can afford to wait a little bit to save, what was it, 60%, I think the number was last week? I mean, that's a huge cost savings.
I agree. It's a no-brainer.
Yeah. The other thing that I wanted to call out, mostly because, and this is not an addition, it's more of a subtraction, but, you know, and we've talked about this a couple times over the last few months, right? We're seeing more and more stuff that is only available in the new portal, right? Not in the old portal or the classic portal, as we call it, and storage accounts, right? So one of the real fundamental components is moving over. And I was actually poking around that portal the other day when I got this one about the storage accounts, and man, there's very little that is left in that portal. Almost every button I was clicking down through is, this is move, this is move, this is move. So that portal's time is very short.
So I mean, you know, you probably get, you know, obviously calls from folks who still use the old portal.
Absolutely, like, yeah.
Why are they still on the old portal? What's the
Well, this was not intended, but we'll be talking about Azure Active Directory Domain Services a little bit later. It is one of the services that is still there. So usually, we swear out to her that wasn't intentional. that's typically where we see it, right? They have older deployments. I don't run into anybody really deploying anything new there on a general case, unless they're, you know, they've got some restriction, right? Some service that hasn't migrated.
Right. Okay. And then the thing, the top news in the today was Mark Rusinovich announcing about the Azure Site Recovery being able to do disaster recovery of IaaS VMs, right? And it does it automatically.
Yeah.
So it replicates it across regions now, which is something amazing. So you don't have to do anything. You just say, I want this, you know, to be, ready for disaster, and that's it. It all happens automatically. You don't have to install any special appliance, any special software to do the backups, you know, to do the replication of the bits and everything. It just happens.
Yep. Yeah, now that ASR is really powerful to start with. And then when you add in that layer to, you know, do region backups, then or regional backups, that's a whole nother, you know, level at that point.
And how about these 4 terabyte disks that are coming out?
That's massive.
What's up with those?
I'm actually really. I'm sure there's some scenarios that I'm just not familiar with that I don't use. But I mean, I thought everybody was using to moving to a world where they spread out what they store across multiple disks, or they're using, kind of software RAID on top of it. But I mean, I guess there are still, scenarios out there where you need one big massive disk, and when you do, we've got it, right?
Yeah. I mean, if you, I guess if you're, manipulating, we talked about last time with this Azure Batch, right? Sometimes you have to manipulate these huge 3D models and things like that. I don't know how big they go, but it helps to have them in one place, right? As opposed to having them spread on different servers. Okay. What else is here? I saw. So the this was a good one. I think you put this in there, Evan. So, there was always this complication, right? We had these Bistalk services and we had logic apps and then, the hybrid connections and whatnot, right? And it was, I guess, some of it was just historical from the way it started with Bistalk and Bistalk services. And finally, they've done the right thing, I think, is they've integrated all the Bistalk services capabilities into logic apps now. And that's really, logic apps is the most modern rendition of orchestration and workflow applications,
Yeah,
right?
is my memory right that I have to apologize to the PM that we had on. I can't recall his name off the top of my head, but I think those were coming out of the same team, what, a year or so ago when we talked to the folks from the Logic Apps team,
I believe you're
right?
right. I believe you're
Yeah,
absolutely
so
right. Yep.
it's not surprising at some point that they kind of brought them together officially and are
It's just that there's been
working.
such a vested interest in Bistalk services because, people used the Bistalk server, right, on-premise before. And so that was the historical aspect to it. And so it was, I think it must have been difficult to just take it out completely. But I think now they have made it such that new subscribers will not be able to create a Bistalk services account anymore or subscription.
Effective,
And
yes, effective today. So,
effective
yeah.
today, yeah. And so, but all those capabilities are now blended into Logic Apps. So that's where they should be looking. All right, what else did we cover? That was a lot. I think that was it, right?
Yeah,
That's a good
I think
roundup
so.
for all the news for today. And so let's move over to our special guest, Arturo. Arturo, thank you so much for joining us. It must be late over there for you, but can you please give us a little bit of a background on yourself and what you do at
Yeah,
Microsoft? Thank you.
definitely. So, first of all, thanks for having me. Super excited to join you guys. Had been looking forward to this for a few weeks. So, my name is Arturo Catero. I'm one of the program managers in the identity division, primarily working on Active Directory, Azure Active Directory, domain services, Azure Active Directory Connect Health, and amongst a few other services. Been here, working here for about 2 years. And so you've seen a couple of the features we've pushed out recently that I've gotten to help put together, which is awesome.
That's great. And Evan, I believe you got Arturo to us. How do you know him?
Yeah, so I actually did a deep dive on this product. So this product is really interesting, I think, because one, nobody in their right mind wants to run a domain controller, right? You want a DC because you need the functionality. It's just like Exchange servers, right? But when it sits on top of some IaaS functionality, right? And so I came from the IaaS world before I moved to the Active Directory world. And I was trying to get my feet wet in this space and deep dive on a technology. And I actually dove, spent some non-trivial time with Azure Active Directory Domain Services, trying to understand how it's architected, how it works, trying to bring in some of my IaaS knowledge about troubleshooting. And during the course of that, ran into Arturo. And just thought it was, again, I think it's a really neat product and thought it'd be fun to have him on to talk about it.
Yeah, I mean,
Awesome.
my background in domain services, obviously on the on-premise world, and I know it's not a trivial thing. I know large companies have hundreds of domain servers, right, if not more, and they pull their hair trying to manage them on a daily basis. So, tell us more about what this does to alleviate that pain.
Yeah, definitely. So, Azure D Domain Services is a fairly new service. It's been around, I'm going to say, for a year now. It provides managed domain services, things like domain join, group policy, LDAP, Kerberos, NTLM authentication, and whatnot, without a customer having to go and stand up DCs like Evan was talking about. It's fully compatible with Windows Server Active Directory, but it is a service that we run for customers. And so the benefit to a lot of the customers is that they can go and and stand up Azure AD Domain Services and use it as if, you know, a lot of their apps or with a lot of their apps that require some of these things like domain join or LDAP with having the benefit of it being a service.
So the first question I'm sure you you know you get from a lot of people, and I want to ask you is, how is this different from Azure Active Directory, right? This Azure AD, I know that's been the traditional thing, and now this ADDS. So give us some explanation about the two.
Yeah, so Azure AD Domain Services is basically, it plugs into Azure AD, right? It is being used or populated based on the users of the existing Azure AD directory. What this allows is to make that next step of utilizing some of those protocols or things that are specific to Windows Server Active Directory. Like I said, things like LDAP or Kerberos or NTLM, if you want to leverage those on the Azure AD world, you can do that using domain services.
I see. Okay, so, but if you have Azure, if you have ADDS, you don't need Azure Active Directory, correct?
So you're talking about if you have on-prem AD, right?
No, if you have this new product that you're just talking about.
Yes.
If someone's going to sign up for Azure AD Directory Services, they don't need the other Azure AD, right? I hope I'm not confusing the names here.
Yeah, so imagine the workflow would be a customer comes and signs up for Azure AD, and now they're making use of all of these productivity tools.
I see. So it's an add-on, you're saying. It's bolted on
exactly.
as an additional exactly. extension. Oh, I see. Okay, okay. I thought they were two distinct products. Okay.
Yes.
Or services. Okay. That makes a lot of sense.
You could kind of look at it, Sajid, as it's almost... So typically, right, we see on-premises Active Directory is replicated into Azure Active Directory, right? And so you're mirroring what you have on-premises, you're flattening out the schema and pushing
it. But that's just the users only, right?
Yeah, users and you know some device objects and some other things. But yeah, conceptually users, right?
Right.
This takes it the next level that says, okay, now let's rehydrate an Active Directory domain, right? Domains, Active Directory domain services onto a Windows Server Active Directory Domain Services from the Azure Active Directory. Now you get, you know, now you have all your group policy. You've got computer objects now that are sitting there. You've got, you know, domain DNS capabilities, domain join, right? All that stuff comes along for it. I actually put, and we're actually having him on in a couple, 3 weeks, but I actually ran into a customer the other day that is moving down the path of they're throwing away their on-premises infrastructure entirely. Right, and what they're moving to is Azure AD domain, Azure AD joined on-premises machines, then for their servers that are sitting in Azure that need group policy, that need some of the domain join capabilities, they have an Azure AD domain services instance up there.
Yeah, definitely. And this is to alleviate a lot of the times that customers are running domain controllers primarily because they have an app or they have a workload that depends on something from Windows Server. And that's about it. And, you know, they want to get away from the business of having to manage that domain controller. And domain services is a way that they can do that.
Now, so those the one kind of caution that I would have moving to this is, okay, so, you know, I think domain controllers are typically very tightly integrated with Windows servers and Windows machines, right? And they're dependent on them, right? So obviously now that the fact that the domain controller is somewhere else in the cloud, right, there is a potential for some sort of loss of connectivity, right? What does this mean for all my machines on which I still have on premises? Like, just suppose, you know, there's a momentary loss of connectivity to Azure. Does this mean that now they cannot log in, they cannot boot up? What does this mean?
So you're saying if your machine from on-prem that is domain joined
right.
loses connectivity to Azure AD domain services?
Correct. Yeah, just suppose, you know, the internet is
so down. you're thinking like a site-to-site connection in that case, Sajid, right?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, isn't it going to still rely on the DS on the Azure DS service for logging in and looking up its computer objects and things like that.
I think the way that and Arturo, I mean, correct me if you see differently, but what I've run into customers using this is they're actually, so a lot of times they'll have to spin up a DC in an Azure virtual network for some workload that's running in Azure. Right. And this, the AADS is aimed at replacing that.
That's fine. Right, that's primarily. All in the cloud. I mean, so it doesn't.
Yeah. I have seen a couple people that have used it to even go back on premises, but now you have to maintain a site to site connection. And at that point, you're really probably better off looking at something like AAD domain or AAD join machines or AAD registration, registration.
So primarily it is customers that are running these machines in Azure.
Okay, so the machines that are connecting to it are also in Azure.
Correct.
Okay, all right. So it wouldn't be a scenario where I have a huge office with 1,000 PCs that are domain joined, and now that domain is moved to Azure DS. That's not a typical scenario.
Correct, because a lot of the times what we'll encourage customers is to go and take those PCs and do Azure AD join.
Okay. And so when you do that, what happens? Explain that process to me.
From taking a machine domain joined and putting it into Azure AD join?
Yes.
Yeah, so it primarily is just taking that registration from the machine and doing it using the cloud account of the user, right?
Okay. And so then does that machine now, that workstation now gets associated with the domain controller in Azure?
That gets associated with the Azure AD tenant.
Okay.
Right. This is irrespective of Azure AD domain services.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
When you're taking a machine and you're Azure AD joining it, you're joining it to the Azure AD tenant. Then you should be able at a later point, or maybe even if you already did, go and enable Azure AD domain services. But when a machine is Azure AD joined, it's primarily done to the Azure AD tenant.
Got it. Okay. That's good. That's very good. So, what are some of the, like, are there any reasons why customers should not be using this service?
Yes and no. Ideally, you can solve them all, right? But yeah, there's definitely obviously a lot of. Oftentimes, there's some limitations that we want customers to be aware of, and we've documented all of these. You know, the primary comparison that we try to do is, you know, whether should you do Azure AD domain services, or should you do it yourself AD in Azure VMs, right? Where you can go and deploy a VM in Azure and make it a domain controller and whatnot. There's a few main differences. A couple of the things is that, like, when you're doing Azure AD domain services, one of the things that we do want to note to customers is that they don't get enterprise administrative privileges to the managed domain.
Hmm.
So that's caveat that some customers that might require enterprise admin rights might be steered away from domain services. Another of the woes that might be of interest is that we don't have schema extensions at the moment. So customers that require a workload that needs schema extensions would not be supported with Azure AD domain services today.
Okay, that's an important one. Yeah.
Yes. And then the other thing is LDAP writes. We allow reads, LDAP reads from Azure AD Domain Services Managed Domain, but not writes.
And that's coming because ultimately this is mastered from the Azure Active Directory.
Exactly.
Tenant,
yes.
Right. So you could probably do your write. You just wouldn't do it to the AAD Domain Services instance. You would do it through whatever the appropriate mechanism is into Azure AD.
Correct.
Right.
And then that brings it into AADDS.
Correct. But just as you know, so that's one the other change. But then you know, in regards to what are some of the things that you can do. Is that, you know, you can do secure LDAP. We do support that. We support a custom OU structure. So if you wanted to go and set up custom OUs, you can go and create those. And you can apply group policy to those OUs as you please. A few of the other things is you can do what we mentioned already, domain join, NTLM and Kerberos authentication, those are all supported. And then one of the big ones is that we have a very, you know, because it's a managed domain and a managed service, we take care of all the deployment patching, you know, making sure that deployment's secure or what have you, so that you don't have to worry about that.
Okay, that's very good. And Evan, you know, you said if you like, what are the typical issues that you're hearing from customers?
It's interesting because it's a managed service. Really, the bulk of the issues that we've seen are really kind of fall on two sides of the spectrum. The one side is, hey, you know, it is, you know, the customer just missed a configuration step. This is something I've actually fed back to the engineering team, so this won't be news to Arturo about this, but you know, this is a non-trivial product to set up. It's probably 6 web pages worth of steps, and if you miss one, right, it is you're going to have trouble. I will tell people the one people tend to miss is password sync. But you know, assuming you go through and carefully follow the steps, right, now you have this fully managed thing. Once you get past that, it generally just works. I mean, just like any other service, there are the occasional bug. You know, again, in my world, nothing ever works right, you know, all the time. So, you know, I'm probably a little bit jaded to that. But by and large, right, outside of, hey, I just missed a step setting it up, this thing really does just work. Yeah. You know, it's really a neat product, which I got to give you guys credit on the engineering team, because, you know, I grew up in the Azure IaaS world where everything was, you know, where IaaS VMs were brand new. I remember all the people trying to set up DCs in the first place. Windows Active Directory Domain Services is not by default a happy camper in a virtualized world to start with, much less layering in some of the complexities that come in with the Azure world. So, I mean, I'm sure you guys have had to invest some non-trivial effort to kind of overcome some of those things. But, I mean, it really does. Once you get it up and running, and assuming you follow the steps, this really does generally just work.
And to address your point, or give you a little bit more on the whole, you know, today, yes, it is 6 pages, I think, worth of steps to go and enable. But just you guys mentioned earlier, right, we are – it shouldn't be a secret that we're planning on moving to the new Azure portal. And, you know, over there, we're doing a lot of work to make sure that we can streamline some of that stuff and make it even simpler for people to go and deploy. So be on the lookout for that.
Okay. Now, Tim, what's the scaling story here? How do people start small and grow with the service? I'm sure that's possible, right?
Yeah, definitely. So it's really the way that the service scales, or even, you know, the way that it's built, it's based on the number of objects that customers have, right? We can scale, you know, pretty large, but we will start the customer with, depending on the number of objects they have in AD, which is what gets hydrated to domain services. The more objects the customer has, the bigger their managed domain will be. That being said, from a customer perspective, it won't make a difference, right? They won't notice the difference.
Okay. And we were just talking about, you know, some of these scenarios where, you know, you may want to roll back to a previous day's, you know, snapshot or something like that. Can you do any of those features with the service?
So today we do take, you know, we are conscious and we follow the procedures of backup and whatnot. From the UI perspective, we don't have a way for customers to go and say, hey, please go revert me to what I had yesterday. But that's an interesting, you know, thing to take into consideration. Should we make that accessible for customers to allow them to say, hey, I need to roll back to 2 days ago or a week ago?
Yeah, Sujeet, when you look at your subscription for these resources, again, these are really similar to Azure VPN appliances, where they don't show up as virtual machines in your subscription. Right. These are actually virtual machines that are sitting underneath the Azure Active Directory Domain Services engineering team subscriptions, and they're projected into your virtual network, just like, again, you know, Azure VPN or some of the other managed services are. So it's not, you know, when you look through your VMs, you're not going to see, you know, this particular VM sitting out there. So there, you know, there is a little bit more abstraction for some of this.
Definitely.
So it's a true SaaS offering kind of thing, I suppose.
Yes.
Yep.
Thanks for mentioning that, Evan.
Yeah, the other thing I do want to call out, and again, this is not exposing the flaws so much as I want to make sure customers do know, there is probably the biggest limitation we see today is that because it is classic only, If you can absolutely use this with ARM deployments, but you have to do a VNet to VNet connection between your ARM VNet and your classic VNet. And the classic VNets where the AADDS domain, AADDS services deployed, but because you have a VNet to VNet connection, it can talk to the VMs that are in the ARM deployment. So it's a really easy limitation to overcome if you have all ARM VMs, but it is something we get pretty regularly on the support side of customers trying to do it, and they're not quite clear on how to make it work.
Yeah. And I believe we have some instructions on that, and let me know, Evan, if we need any more clarifications on it. But yeah,
no, they're pretty good now. I will be among, I'm sure, multiple people in the organization who will be thrilled when you guys are fully kind of ARM compliant. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, at this point, I think you guys have done a good job of making the best of, ARM and Classic don't go together really well anywhere. VNet, there's some real pain points if you're trying to do VNet, ARM VNet with Classic VNets. This kind of just gets layered on top of that. But it's definitely very workable. I mean, the steps are relatively straightforward if you've ever done any VNet to VNet connectivity. So most customers do okay with it.
And what's the SLA that we're offering on the service?
Sorry, what was that?
What is the SLA?
It's the standard Azure SLA, right?
So three nines, four nines?
I believe it's three nines, right?
Three nines, okay.
Yeah, I'd so have to not, go back and look.
So it's not geo-replicated yet. It's just within the region.
Correct. Today it is not geo-replicated.
Excellent. All right, great. Well, I think that's some nice insight into the service. I don't think we ever covered the service before, so for a long time, we're covering a brand new service, and that's really nice. Thank you so much. Any more questions for Arturo, Evan?
No, this is great. I mean, like I said, I heartily recommend this to almost every customer I talk to who is setting these up, because I have been through the horror stories of, hey, I tried to set up AD in Azure, and I didn't put my DIT on the right. I put it on my temporary drive, and it just fell apart, and I didn't. There's all kinds of ways you can go wrong setting up your own DC in Azure. Definitely. This is a way better option. If you don't need some of the things that AD that domain services brings, natively you set your own DC. If you can get away without having those, I highly recommend customers look at this.
Yep.
All right. Well.
Definitely. I'd echo that.
And please send us any kind of references, etc., that you would like to share with our listeners. Arturo, we'll put that in the show notes along with this episode, and of course, we'll make that available to all our listeners. Okay.
Will do.
Great.
Thank you.
Thanks. Great. Thanks, Arturo.
Thanks so much for having us, for coming on, and for enlightening us.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.